Well, my talk today is entitled, Is There Hope for Liberty in Our Lifetime? And it's certainly tempting to think that there is. As I discussed in the first part of my book, libertarianism, not all that long ago, used to be something that was really just known to a tiny handful of people who were scattered all across the country. I think I've heard, you know, Walter Block say that several decades ago, if you were in the libertarian movement, you knew everybody else who was in the libertarian movement, or at least it felt that way. And this was even true to a considerable extent when I first became a libertarian about 15 years ago. You know, I only heard about libertarianism because I happened to know somebody who saw that I was interested in political ideas, conservative ones in my case at the time, and suggested that I subscribe to the Freeman magazine published by the Foundation for Economic Education. And probably some of the older people in this room were introduced to libertarian ideas in much the same way. But most people didn't know anyone who could tell them to subscribe to the Freeman, and so, you know, they didn't hear about libertarianism, they didn't read about it in magazines that they read, they didn't, libertarian books weren't on the New York Times bestseller list, they weren't hearing about it on TV or anything. But now, of course, everything's changed. You meet people who call themselves libertarians everywhere, and, you know, some of the people don't know what that means necessarily, but what's remarkable is how many of the, well, it's remarkable that they even know the word libertarian, but what's really remarkable is how many of them really do know what that means. I've been going around the past year and given lectures at various law schools across the country, and I've been amazed that law students come up to me and they start telling me about Murray Rothbard, and they tell me they read LouRockwell.com every day, and they tell me they're reading about Austrian economics from books available from the Mises Institute that they're reading online for free because of the Mises Institute. Even when I was in law school less than a decade ago, this was unfathomable. There weren't law students around like this, like there are now. There are two big factors that have contributed to this, and they both kind of build on each other. One is the internet, and the other, of course, is Ron Paul. When Ron Paul ran for president, of course, the mainstream media almost completely ignored him, but you had this hardcore of fans on the internet who kind of put the word out, it got people interested, and eventually they were able to raise enough money online to kind of launch him to mainstream media attention. And then he was able to give his message from a better platform, reaching more people. And then in turn, when Ron Paul sent people back to the internet to learn more about these ideas he was espousing related to liberty and Austrian economics, and specifically he sent them to the Mises Institute, which had been espousing these ideas, particularly the most important ideas related to war and the Federal Reserve, as no other institution had been doing. And of course, they had this wonderful online library that's unlike anything that anybody else had out there. And now that this is happening, you're hearing about libertarianism in places you wouldn't have expected to. You're hearing about, you're hearing the names Mises and Hayek in the mainstream media. The people who are referring to them might not understand what Mises and Hayek actually have to say, but they at least know the names, and it demonstrates that our ideas are getting into the culture in a way that they never did before. Again, to anyone who's been around this movement for more than a few years, this is all just astonishing. This is something I couldn't have imagined, certainly. Even 5 years ago, I don't think I would have thought we'd be anywhere close to where we are now. So when you look at this explosion of growth that we've had as a movement, and when you look at some of the anti-government sentiment that seems to be out there, it's certainly tempting to think that we have a relatively good shot at getting closer to a libertarian society here in the United States in our lifetimes. But there's a quote from Ayn Rand that I think is relevant here. It's a quote that Jeff Riggenbach sometimes brings up in his Libertarian Tradition podcasts, which you should subscribe to if you don't already because they're excellent. But the quote from Rand is, it's earlier than you think. Meaning, of course, that even though it seems like our ideas have gained a lot of ground, even though it seems like it should be really obvious to everyone that they should cast off the statism that's oppressing them, it really, we're not that close after all. There's a whole lot more work that we need to do before we're going to be close to that point, if we ever get there. So the question is, How will we get from here to there? What kinds of things can we do to get from here to there faster? Well, first I want to consider a couple things that some people advocate to advance liberty that I don't think will work, and then I'll talk about what I think will work. Some people think that electoral politics is the way to go. I don't think so. There's one way in which electoral politics certainly can advance our cause as an educational platform. Murray Rothbard favored the foundation of the Libertarian Party because he thought, you know, most people are busy living their lives and they're not thinking about political ideas most of the time, except every 4 years when there's a presidential election, people start thinking about it again. So this is a way that we can put our ideas out there when that opportunity arises. And, you know, the Libertarian Party has been doing that with varying degrees of consistency and success since it's been formed. And, of course, Ron Paul did essentially the same thing in 2008. That's fine. What's not fine for advancing liberty is trying to run candidates for Congress or for the presidency with the idea that you're actually going to win the office. Because you're not going to win any elections with a libertarian message, not with a real libertarian message, because most people aren't libertarians. You know, you can point to Ron Paul winning a seat in Congress, but Ron Paul is the exception to a great many rules. As Lou Rockwell says, there's only one Ron Paul. The reality is, the overwhelming majority of people in America, in every state and in every city in America, are not libertarians. They're not even close to being libertarians. They're not going to be close to being libertarians anytime soon. It's just reality. Not most of the people, not half the people, not a quarter of the people. David Kirby and David Bowes at the Cato Institute have done some studies where they've looked at polling data and concluded that 14% of voters are libertarian. And if that was true, that would be very encouraging. You'd think, well, then we'd have something like a critical mass that could really push things in the right direction. Unfortunately, that number is way, way too high. If you look at the questions they asked, they just kind of gauged people's attitudes towards government and the market and kind of added that up to these some people being libertarians. But there was nothing in those studies, in those polls, that would give you any clue whatsoever of where those people stood on the most important issues, some of the most important issues, such as war, the police state, the Federal Reserve. The people counted as libertarians in that poll could have easily supported all those things, and I don't doubt that most of them do support most of those things. And so if you took a realistic poll and you defined libertarian the way that most people in the libertarian movement would define it, you'd find that the actual percentage in the general public is very, very low. Well, what about the Tea Party? You might think there's cause for hope there because, after all, it sounds like they're saying, even if they're not perfect libertarians, it sounds like they're saying some of the right things and they seem to have a decent us versus them attitude toward Washington, which seems healthy. And without question, and of course, there are some big names in the libertarian movement who have thought this, who have tried to latch on to the Tea Party movement, tried to fund it and its candidates, thinking that it might finally be a chance to get smaller government, to get politicians in Washington who will shrink government. Without question, there are some true libertarians in the Tea Party movement. There are hardcore libertarians in the Tea Party movement. And I'm sure that some of those people are able to use the Tea Party movement to influence others who might be new to political ideas, who might be kind of on the borderline in the direction of libertarianism. You know, I started out as conservative and I came around, so I'm sure they can bring some people around too. And, you know, I know there are little cells of the Tea Party, given the way the Tea Party is organized, it's decentralized, there are little cells of it that are hardcore libertarian. But if you look at the numbers, you realize that if liberty is going to be achieved in America, it's not these people who are going to bring it about. Consider some figures from an April 2010 CBS New York Times poll that was taken of people who identify as Tea Party supporters. It asked Tea Partiers to identify what political figures they admired most. And this wasn't particularly rigged or anything. They could say anybody they want. They could say none of the above. They could say other. Well, who was number one for the Tea Partiers among the people they admire most in politics? If you guessed Ron Paul, I appreciate your optimism, your good feelings towards your fellow man, thinking the best of people and all, but you're way off. It's Newt Gingrich, who, of course, is known favoring the death penalty for drug dealers, favoring war with Iran, praising the New Deal. Number two on their list, and by the way, when I talk about politicians, I'm not saying, well, we should vote against these people or vote for that people. This is just to give you an idea, you know, it's just to make an inference about the people's ideas, that's all. Number two on their list, Newt Gingrich, he's number one. Number two on their list, Sarah Palin, make of this what you will. Number three was a tie between Mitt Romney, the progenitor of Obamacare, and that noted supporter of smaller government and humble foreign policy, George W. Bush. Then at number four, we have another tie. This one is between George H.W. Bush, who gave us those low-flow toilets that we enjoy today, among many other wonderful things. Mike Huckabee, who, as far as I've noticed, has never favored liberty with respect to anything. And then John McCain. And then, finally, we have Ron Paul. So add up all those people who admire George Bush, admire Sarah Palin. What planet could you be from and think that they're worthy of any manner of admiration? Well, anyway, so add up all those people who admire those figures, and then compare that to the number who admire Ron Paul, which was, by the way, 3%. That's 3% of all Tea Partiers, not the general public, Tea Partiers. And then you start to get a sense of how likely that movement is to advance liberty. Those figures I gave are a little old. They were from a year ago. So you might be tempted to think that the Tea Party has gotten a little more radical since then. After all, government has only gotten bigger. They've had more time to absorb the ideas of Austrian economics and so forth. So maybe they've started coming around. Maybe they're more radically opposed to the government now. Well, I'm afraid not. Back in September, the Pew Research took a poll of Tea Party supporters, and they found that 47% of Tea Partiers said they're angry with the federal government. Now, this should seem kind of strange, right? Because, the media is always telling us how angry the Tea Partiers are. And if you look at the books that are out there about the Tea Party, they have titles like Boiling Mad and Mad as Hell. Well, if they're not angry at the federal government, what are they angry at? I don't know. But if they're really anti-government, then you would think they'd be really angry at the federal government because they have a lot to be angry about. But back in September 2010, 47%. But now you might think they're angrier now because, after all, government has only gotten bigger, new wars and so forth. And, of course, they elected all these Tea Party guys to Congress, and government hasn't started shrinking yet. All these Tea Party guys, almost all of them, voted to renew the Patriot Act. No debate, no changes. They all just went for it. So you think, well, they'd be really mad, right? Because these guys betrayed us, and they'd be really angry with the federal government. Unfortunately, you'd be once again too optimistic. A Pew poll taken last month found that only 28% of Tea Partiers now are angry with the federal government. And think about that. That's just after 2 months of a Republican House of Representatives. Imagine how not angry with the federal government most of these people would be if you also had a Republican Senate and a Republican White House. I think you'd find they would be led by the same talk radio hosts who led many of them to the Tea Party, right back to where they were during all those years when George W. Bush, who most of them like, was president. By the way, all of this is to say nothing, of course, of the troubling anti-immigrant, virulently anti-Islam, pro-war views that all of them espouse, right alongside their limited government talk. And if you're interested, by the way, here are the top three. This poll was just taken last month. The top three 2012 presidential picks of Tea Partiers from a Pew poll. Number one, Mitt Romney. Number two, Mike Huckabee. Number three, Newt Gingrich. In fairness, though, that was a month ago. If they took it now, maybe the Tea Partiers would put Donald Trump in there instead. And so that might not characterize their views now. So I don't think it's an especially encouraging sign that the Tea Party movement came along and adopted some of the Ron Paul movement's rhetoric and strategies. And I think the people who are trying to fund that movement, who think that backing that movement is going to advance liberty, I think it's a waste. Not necessarily for libertarians who are trying to work with them and influence them, but for actually trying to fund this as a movement that's going to elect people who are going to make our lives better. And of course, there's still other reasons to think that Americans aren't going to elect libertarians anytime soon. I mean, think about the American public and what they've supported. Think about especially the early 20th century, all the stuff that Americans went along with. I mean, first you had World War I. So they got behind that, and they got behind conscription to send their sons off to be killed for this senseless war. You had the Fed then, but maybe you can't blame people for supporting that. Then, of course, you had more than a decade of alcohol prohibition that people tolerated for that long. Then, of course, you had the New Deal, which people voted for again and again. Then, of course, during World War II, Americans tolerated the government rounding up Japanese-American citizens, putting them into concentration camps. And then you had Americans, of course, going along with all manner of wartime economic controls and thinking that was fine. And that was in the early 20th century. Think about how much closer the country was back then to whatever libertarian roots it might have. Those people who supported all that stuff in the early 20th century, they weren't raised going to federally controlled government schools. And those people were much more loyal to other institutions besides the state, such as their churches, such as fraternal organizations. And so if those people could be so easily manipulated into supporting unprecedented fascism in America, how much more likely do you think Americans today are to vote for less government? Consider also that over the decades ahead, more and more people will be receiving checks from the government through Social Security and through government employment. Do you think those people are going to suddenly want to get rid of the federal government? Do you think they're going to want to roll it back? Of course they're not. Of course they're not. I don't say all of this to be negative or to depress you. The point is simply that trying to win elections isn't going to work now or anytime soon, because most people aren't libertarian and aren't about to be. As Ayn Rand said, it's earlier than you think. Some people argue that since libertarianism can't win through the electoral process, we should go to the federal courts and get libertarianism that way. After all, that's what the left wing does, right? I mean, when the people won't go for what they want, they go to the federal courts and try to get them to force people to accept what they won't vote for. With these libertarians, the idea is we need to get government to start reading Congress's powers into the Constitution, like under the Commerce Clause, more narrowly, and start reading the protections for liberty more broadly. This camp has had big wins recently. It's true. They had big wins with the District of Columbia versus Heller and McDonald versus Chicago gun cases, where the Supreme Court recognized that the Second Amendment protects an individual right to bear arms and that it applies against the states. And so these legal activists think, with some justification, that their strategy is a good one. And of course, it is a great and heroic thing that they went and that they did this. There can't be any doubt whatsoever that people in D.C., here in Chicago, other cities that had stringent gun control laws are now better off. They enjoy a right that they couldn't before. But their big victory for liberty is not likely to last very long in the long run. After all, the Supreme Court said in those decisions that while an absolute ban on guns is unacceptable, reasonable restrictions would be okay. And when they tell us what reasonable restrictions means, I think we'll find that the right that they're willing to recognize is extremely, extremely narrow. Winning court battles on issues like this helps people in the short term. And again, that's great. It's heroic. It's saving people from being victims of government crime. But it does nothing to address the underlying problem of a federal government that's growing and always grabbing more power for itself. The federal courts are absolutely not ever going to help us win that battle. The federal judges who sit on those courts are, of course, selected by the president, confirmed by a Senate, and those guys are never going to select or confirm anyone who won't tell them they can do absolutely anything they want to do. A strategy that relies on the courts relies on the assumption that the rulers that Washington chooses for us are someday just going to turn benevolent and give us liberty. That idea should just seem absurd to any libertarian. The idea accepts the myth that federal judges, they're really just unbiased, arbiters, neutral arbiters of disputes. Of course, they're not. They're political rulers who want to and do control us. Judges haven't harmed liberty because lawyers haven't made good enough constitutional arguments in favor of liberty. They've harmed liberty because it's what they're put on the bench to do. So the courts aren't going to save us. What will work? People who want instant gratification are not going to be pleased by my answer. Because my answer is the same answer that Albert J. Nock gave in his classic essay, Isaiah's Job, and that Leonard Reed gave in his classic essay, How to Advance Liberty, both of which you should read. What we can do now to advance liberty is first and foremost to work on the one unit of society that we're actually capable of improving, which is ourselves. You'll learn more about liberty, learn more about history, learn more about Austrian economics. And we can learn to improve ourselves in every respect so that we're more capable of communicating these ideas that we learn to others and that others would actually see us as someone who they want to learn from. Our purpose shouldn't be to go out and foist our ideas on others who haven't asked for them. People don't appreciate that, and it'll close their minds to us, I think, for the most part. And that kind of mentality is too close to the mentality that statists have, that our job is to go out and remold people into the shape that we think they should be in. I don't think that's a healthy attitude. Instead, because we'll make ourselves the best that we can be, people will be drawn to us. Because of the character and intellect that we'll cultivate, they'll want to hear what we have to say. Other people following our example, then, will want to spread the ideas to others. And slowly, we'll see the ideas seep more and more into the culture. Eventually, we'll see them popping up in unexpected places. We'll hear them coming back to us from the mouths of people we wouldn't have expected to hear them from, as Nock would predict. This isn't far-fetched. We have a perfect example of this phenomenon in the real world today. In fact, this method I advocate, I believe, is responsible for the huge explosion of interest in liberty that we see. And our perfect example is Ron Paul. Did Ron Paul really ever seek mass appeal? Did he run national advertisements saying, come check out what I have to say, or anything of the kind? No. All he did was communicate his ideas clearly and consistently for decades using whatever forum was available to him, while also maintaining an exceptionally high level of personal integrity that led people to respect him and to pay serious attention to what he had to say. Then, almost as if by magic, hundreds of thousands of people were just drawn to him in a way that people in the normal political world couldn't understand, right? Because normal politicians don't naturally attract people. Natural politicians have to, regular politicians have to go out and make all kinds of absurd promises to get people to come pay attention to them. It's the complete opposite of what normally goes on in politics. And now look at the people who he's inspired. Look at the people who have gone out and started spreading the ideas themselves. Look at how the names of Mises and Hayek turn up all over the place. Coming again from people who aren't necessarily libertarians, but who now are aware, at least indirectly, of these ideas. This is how our ideas advance. The Mises Institute, of course, also provides an excellent example of this phenomenon at work. As far as I know, the Mises Institute never had a plan to go out and convert the masses. They never were preaching on street corners or anything of the sort. All the Mises Institute did was build a great institution, build a great website, and people just came. People were drawn to it because the Mises Institute was a light in a world of darkness. Now, some might say, well, that's great. Okay, more people know about liberty. Great. And they're talking about it. But how do we actually get liberty? One way we can actually get liberty that's perfectly consistent with this strategy is by creating institutions that serve as alternatives to government institutions. A great example of this is the homeschooling movement. People who homeschool their children are freeing their children from the coercion of government schools. And you'll notice that this came about just because a bunch of people started doing it. They didn't wait around for liberty-friendly politicians to be elected. They didn't wait around for liberty-friendly judges to be appointed. They didn't ask anybody's permission. And I know some people will say, well, that's fine. So there's little pockets of liberty here and there, but I want a libertarian society. How do we get that? How do we get rid of the state? The answer is just that we have to keep doing our never-ending job of self-improvement and be patient. Someday, we don't know when, the existing Leviathan will collapse just as the Soviet Union collapsed. Nothing lasts forever, especially not a fascist or socialist regime. When that collapse comes, however it comes about, we don't know how it will. If we've done our job in spreading our ideas, there will be a natural aristocracy of libertarian leaders in place who are ready to help rebuild society on a better foundation. This could be many years from now, and I think it'll be after my lifetime. Maybe it won't happen at all, but that's just reality. And it's nothing to be upset about. There are lots of good things that might happen in the future after we're all gone that we can think of that will probably happen that we won't enjoy because we haven't been born in this particular time period. Think of all the technological innovations that we know will happen, but that will happen after our lifetime. You know, interplanetary travel, human lifespans extended to hundreds of years, the holodeck from Star Trek, and of course, flying cars. All these things we think will eventually happen, but we won't get to enjoy them because it'll be too long from now. Well, you sit around all day being bummed out about that? No, of course not. You're glad you live now and you have all the stuff, the iPhones and whatever, that you do have, and you're glad that you don't live in some previous time when things would have been a lot worse. Well, it shouldn't be any different for liberty. There's no reason why we should expect progress in this area to be faster or easier than progress in any other area of human endeavor. Getting a whole society to change its mind about some of its most fundamental beliefs is really difficult. There's no reason to think it wouldn't be, especially when all the world's governments, who have all the guns and most of the money, are working really hard against you. You know, you might say, well, it's not fair. Other people get to see their political ideologies enacted, but that's just reality. There's no quick fix. Libertarianism isn't a political philosophy for people with high time preference. It's high time preference that leads people to think, we need to get results in Washington now. That leads libertarians astray. It's what makes people latch on to politicians who don't really share our values. It's what makes people pursue these campaigns for quasi-libertarian things that would actually move us in the wrong direction, like privatizing Social Security and school vouchers. It's high time preference that makes people think we should focus our efforts on the federal courts, because after all, then you just get a federal judge to say we should have liberty, and boom, instant liberty for the whole country if you get the Supreme Court to do it. But that can't work. It can't possibly work, because even if you could get some judges to do that, which you couldn't, the society wouldn't be ready for it. People would not understand the ideas. The pillars wouldn't be in place to underpin it. This isn't to say, though, we shouldn't be involved with short-term practical political projects. If there's a good chance of protecting somebody's liberty by going to court, fine. If there's an anti-war movement that could stand in the way of a war, join it. But view these things for what they are. Those things are like stopping a particular crime from happening. It's not, it doesn't address the underlying root problem of crime, right? It's like, when the government does a big drug bust and they get, 1,000 kilos of cocaine or whatever they get, huge quantity of cocaine, and they think, wow, this is a great victory in the war on drugs. We're stopping drugs now. Are any less drugs really going to be taken as a result of that? Does that really address the drug problem, if you want to call it that? No, of course not. It doesn't address the drug problem at all. They just stop this one little thing. And so what we need to do is keep our eyes focused on the big problem, the long-term problem. And we can't ever compromise our principles if we do pursue those short-term things, because someone has to keep those ideas alive and growing and pure. And if we don't do it, no one will, and the libertarian movement that we've built so far could be lost. Now, if you have an urgent need for more liberty in your personal life, if that's your complaint, right, that you don't have enough liberty, there's lots of ways you can go out and get it. I mean, you can reduce your tax burden. You can find your ways around regulation, right? I mean, you can be like Jeffrey Tucker and hack your shower so that you can get the showers the government doesn't want you to take. You can hold on to gold instead of Federal Reserve notes. And you can do what a lot of people are doing and move to a part of the world where they'll give you more of whatever kind of freedom is more important to you. And by the way, as people move with their feet like that, I think it's going to happen more and more as travel becomes easier. Governments will have to compete for citizens, and as they do, they're going to have to make themselves less burdensome, and they'll do it without us having to actually dirty our hands with politics. They'll do it because we've made people want more liberty. Anyway, regardless of what happens with the rest of society, we should all be glad that we're living in a time and place that's allowed us to discover libertarianism and Austrian economics. Unlike most people who have ever lived, we can see things clearly that they couldn't. Unlike most people, we can see the state for what it is. Unlike most people, we can see what's going on in the economy and understand what's going on. Unlike most people, we have the truth. And in many respects, the truth has already set us free. So, let's keep learning. Let's keep improving ourselves. Let's keep communicating our ideas to others. Let's create more liberty for ourselves without the politicians' help. And let's take joy in all of that. And even if we don't get as much liberty as we might like in our lifetimes, we'll have enjoyed ourselves doing all of that. And we'll have known, we'll have given our time and our efforts and our lives to a worthwhile cause. Thank you.